And when I tell people I wrote a book about death, they usually go, God, why? And I do the natural thing, which is blame my dad. That's him. He's Eddie Campbell, and he is a comic book artist. And when I was about 3 years old, he started working on a book called From Hell with Alan Moore, which is about the Jack the Ripper murders. And in order to do these drawings, he had all sorts of gruesome pictures pasted up on his drawing board. There were autopsy pictures and crime scenes, and the pictures in the comic ended up looking like this and like this. I mean, they're just drawings, which is what I told my teachers when I accidentally did my homework on the back of them. But they are horrific. However, I wasn't frightened by them. I was fascinated by them. I was fascinated so hard that I thought that I would do my own book about death. So I pulled a cardboard box up to my dad's table, his desk, and I got to work on my own book because I thought all dads were doing this. It was only when I went to my friends' houses and found out they were lawyers and stuff and not at home drawing dead ladies. So I would sit there and I would draw. And here we go. My dad kept it because, like some kind of Gomez Adams, he was very, very enthusiastic about it and would show it to horrified guests. So I can show you some of it today. In the beginning, Dad and I would work off the same thing. So he brought home this cow's kidney from the butcher's, and he laid it out in the lounge on a handkerchief, and he painted it. And he had to work against the clock because this was in Australia and it was really hot, so he had to paint very hard, very fast before it went rancid. We were both working very hard because I was right beside him drawing the same thing, only I think mine was more honest because mine included the flies. With spelling like that, it was written in the stars that I would work for The Guardian. And then it just becomes a compendium of all the violent ways a human being could die. And this does get quite grisly, so if you're feeling squeamish, maybe look away. Being bashed to death, being buried alive, being left hanging up for the birds to eat, death by torture. Some revisionist art historians have tried to claim this as tickling, but I drew it, and that is flame. Struck by lightning. When you're cut up while you're sleeping. Being shot, just a classic. And if someone chops your head off and your skin rots, you look like this. That, I think, is just a fact, and you can't argue with that. And facts was all I wanted to know. I was really interested in facts. I had all of these questions about death, which my dad clumsily tried to answer, but I was asking everyone. And I went to a Catholic school, and you're not supposed to ask all sorts of questions about dead bodies. It gets a bit awkward at Easter, and the priest stops talking to you. But I just wanted to know, I wanted to know what bodies looked like when people died. I wanted to know what happened to them when we put them in the ground, and what happened between the flesh stage and the skeleton stage. I just wanted to know all of it. But no one would tell me. And then when I was 13, my friend died. She drowned in a creek trying to rescue her dog. It was flooded. It was crazy. And all I remember from her funeral was this white coffin. I don't remember the eulogies, I don't remember who was there, I don't remember anything about it. I was just staring at this white box, wanting to know what was inside it. I knew my friend was in there because I had been told, and you know, that's what happens with coffins, but I wanted to know what she looked like. I wanted to know if she was green, like the zombies I saw in films. And it was so consuming, because I had no information. I just had all this blank space. And when you have blank space like that, your mind just fills it with all the horrors it has on file. And I had so many on file. And so that was it for years. But it was at that funeral that I became conscious of the fact that there were people who do see these things, because somebody had to pull her from the creek, and somebody had to dry her hair, and somebody had to put her in the coffin. And they were all around the church. They were hanging around the hearse. So I became interested in this kind of hidden world of people who do see all the things I wanted to see. And when I grew up and became a journalist, I discovered one of the greatest things about being a journalist is you can exploit your position to investigate all the things you personally want to know. And if you tell people you're writing a book, they'll invite you in and tell you things, which is what Poppy Mardell did. She's a funeral director in South London. And I went to interview her. And she told me that the first dead body you see should not be someone you love. She said you should be given the chance to separate the shock of seeing death for the first time from the shock of grief, which is not something we ever get the chance to do. And she said she almost died years before I met her. She had typhoid. And it caused a kind of, you know, she wanted to change what she was doing with her life. And she thought she'd work in the death industry and try and do something there, something meaningful. And so that was the first time she ever saw a dead body. And she said the first time she saw a dead body, she realized she was angry. She was angry that she had to face her own death without ever having seen a dead body. And she said she likened it to being pregnant, being 9 months pregnant, being about to give birth, having never seen a child in your whole life. And she said it was terrifying. And so she wants to stop that happening for as many people as she can. So when I was talking to her, I said, well, I've never seen a dead body. And she said, well, come back and it can be like you're being trained to work here. You can get somebody ready for their funeral. You can dress them. And I was shocked that someone would be so inviting. But of course I went back. And her mortuary doesn't look like what you think a mortuary looks like. It's in there, which is in the middle of this cemetery, it's Lambeth Cemetery. And it was this dilapidated burial church. So she's kind of restored it to its original use. The bodies are stored in there. And inside, it's bright. It smells like pine. It's beautiful. But even so, I went in there and I was nervous because I was about to see a dead body. And Aaron, the mortuary manager, opened the door and he pulled out a tray with a man on it. And he said, come over here because we need to take the man's T-shirt off. His family want to keep it. And so I went over and I saw this man. He was yellow from jaundice. The bits of him were green. The back of him was purple where the blood had pooled. And his eyes had sunk. They were like oysters in their shells. He was unembalmed and he looked properly dead. And he was my first dead person. And I was staring at him. And then Aaron said, can you hold his hand so we can get his T-shirt off? And as soon as I held his hands, he just became a guy. He wasn't a dead man, and he wasn't frightening. And it became this really caring moment, a profound experience, a bodily experience, where I was confronting death and realizing that the way we do funerals is weird and wrong. I never get what I emotionally want from a funeral. A funeral, you feel like you want to do something. If you do this, if you dress your dead, you feel like you're doing something. To me, it's like doing up a kid's shoelaces at the school gate before they run off. It's the last thing you can do for them. And it's just, you can do it in a nice place like this. Poppy was the first person I spoke to. I spoke to many people who work with dead bodies. And the thing I found again and again was that the body matters long after we think it does. We've got this system of payments and disappearances set up. So we pay somebody to do the things we think we can't do. But you can be there for some of it. There are things you shouldn't be there for, but you can be there for some of it. But the thing I found is that each person thought the remains mattered. I spoke to the man at the Mayo Clinic who looks after the frozen cadavers. And he makes sure when an arm goes off to the orthopedic section or the head goes off to the dental people. He makes sure all the pieces come back, and then he cremates the person whole so that they are whole again. Their body can be given back to their family as ashes, but they are cremated whole. And I spoke to a man who identifies people after plane crashes, and he identifies pieces as big as an orange. And he makes sure all of those pieces go back to the families because this stuff matters. And it all reminded me of another story Poppy told me. She said that when she was a young funeral director, a guy had come in desperate. He said that he'd been to many different funeral directors, and all of them had said he couldn't view his brother because his brother had drowned. He had been in the water. He was bloated. He was not as this man would have expected him to look. He had drowned, like my friend. And all of these funeral directors said, you can't see him. And he desperately wanted to see him. And so he went to Poppy, and it was a test. And she said, of course I'll let you see your brother. And she let him see him, and he was happy. And that was his interaction. And what Poppy understood, what all of these people I spoke to, all of these death workers understood, is that remains matter. Whatever is left matters. People need to see it. It is a primal need for some people. Remains matter. That's it. Thank you.